Should I repeat the lesson?
No, that's fine.
So you have to realize that all of these projects are run by a single global management structure. So in the German concentration camps, the Anne and Erbe research program, there were hybrids of humans and animals, living, walking, breeding hybrids of humans and animals on that documentary film, plus other horrific stuff. I mean, disassembling and reassembling human bodies in the best Frankensteinian tradition, starting with live specimen, dismantling of a live pregnant woman. The film was so much for the visiting guy from the Simon Wiesenthal Foundation. He threw up 10 minutes into the film, he threw up on the floor, and this was their end, the end of their efforts to release that information to the public. Hitler was chronicled by his biographer to have said once, "I've seen the new man and he is horrific." He was both fascinated and frightened by the steeliness of the character of the new man. He was probably shown specimen of the super race that has already been developed even probably before the start of the Second World War. After the war, the Germans created a massive colony on the South Pole where these experiments were done for the third time. In the island of Dr. Moreau, they were done probably on dozens of specimens. In the German concentration camps, they were done on thousands of, maybe tens of thousands of hapless victims. At the South Polar Colony, they were done on hundreds of thousands. By the time the war ended, there were about 100,000 concentration camp laborers that probably serve also for some genetic fodder for the Frankensteinian labs there. Research engineers, researchers, engineers, elite SS men, and a lot of Hitlerjugend boys and girls that disappeared down there to be the genetic seed of the new colony, of the new world order. A lot of the missing kids end up in these underground bases, end up with the Germans, and end up on the many established colonies beyond our planet, evacuation and survival colonies. In the late 40s, early 50s, the Germans did test tube genetic engineering, chemical genetic engineering, without much success. A lot of suffering and pains by their own admission, and not much of effect. From the mid-50s on, they started doing radiofrequential genetic engineering that only recently, in the last few years, the first talks started appearing, first ideas about that started appearing in the world, in the global scientific community. They've been quietly doing that. All of these are alien technologies given to us by the collaborating alien races. And quite more advanced master race was produced. According to rumor, they live a lot longer. They don't get the diseases we do. Much higher IQ and on and on and on. All of these things are greatly desirable by most of the population on the planet. One thing that I'm sure about is that by the genetic engineering of the new master race, they have quietly engineered out, weeded out, all the genes that came to the planet from the Trinity. That's making sure that the new master race would practically not be able to tune into the frequencies, into the broadcasts of the Trinity. There are many pages and many articles in the Urantia book about the ways of communication that the Trinity universe uses for its planets. Even on contested planets, these circuitries are there and open, and if one chooses to use them, they are there for anyone's perusal. Enough about the master race. Very quickly about the Germans. What the Germans accomplished technologically, and we would finish with the technology. By 1945, they had landed on Mars. A joint German-Japanese crew landed on Mars, and we have two documentary films from the German secret society, the Thule Gesellschaft and the Knights Templars. Well, these are the German branches of the global Templar organizations. Last year, we did a $1 million budget documentary for Nippon Television on the German secret societies, their anti-gravity programs and their interplanetary flights. And we interviewed close to 50 people. I have this film with me. If it gets dark enough, we can shoot it on that white wall there. I have a big screen TV and I can translate it simultaneously from Japanese, as it was shown to 40 million Japanese about 4 months ago. So there were Japanese members in the joint crew that landed on Mars in middle of January 1946, I mean almost 50 years ago. The Germans established a moon colony in parallel with the other already established Illuminati colonies. And the most interesting revelations that came from my visit last year in Germany, and for the first time ever these members of the secret societies opened up to the public and they gave an extended interview to Nippon Television, and this was the first time ever they've talked to anyone outside. It helped a lot because several Germans have heard my lectures here, and entirely without any coordination they told these secret society members that there is a crazy guy in Los Angeles that talks about German flying saucers. So they knew that I am a legitimate researcher rather than some plant from Eastern Europe or whatever. However, the most interesting revelation and photographs that they showed was that the real society built an interstellar craft, the Vril Odin, which was 45 yards in diameter and 5-story tall. It was developed from the Vril 7 interplanetary craft. With alien assistance, of course, that was capable of warp speed flights. And the craft departed in April 45 near Berlin. They showed color photographs for the first time of that craft in flight. You see pretty good details of the drive system and so on. And I also saw a beautiful watercolor drawing of one of the participants in the flight of the night of the departure. The craft was sitting on its flat belly on the ground. And on the right side there were Mercedes-Benz cars and engineers and scientists taking farewell with their family members. On the left side there were trucks and trailers and soldiers unloading supplies into the craft. The craft flew with warp 3, was it 3 times the speed of light? And it took them 20 years to reach Aldebaran, the star system of the Sumerian alien race, on one of the planets, one of the stars in the Aldebaran constellation, has 2 planets on which the Sumerian Federation, Alien Federation exists. That Sumerian Alien Federation was instrumental in establishing the Sumerian culture on our planet. What is it, like 4,000 years ago, among other things. And these Sumerian aliens worked with the Germans, shoulder to shoulder with the Germans in the underground bases in Germany all throughout the war and even earlier than that. We even discovered a lady in Australia that was a Commonwealth spy in the German underground factory working shoulder to shoulder with aliens, and she had a very funny remark about them. She said, gee, these guys were so beautiful, I would fall in love with every one of them every time I saw a new guy walking down the corridor. Anyway, so it took them 20 years to cover the 60 plus light years from our sun to Aldebaran. The second craft, the Vril Edun, was more advanced. The first thing the craft did was to fly to Mars to pick up the survivors of the Honeybu 3 that crash-landed, but most of the guys, I think all the crew survived this German-Japanese expedition in 45-46. They picked the crew, they brought it back to Earth, that was their test flight, and then they departed for Aldebaran, and they arrived there, I think, in half the time or less, in about 5 to 10 years of terrestrial time. So they arrived before the first craft did. So everything we've been seeing on Star Trek is not the science fiction from the 24th century, but it's a belated revelation of German developments 50 years old. German, I mean German engineers, but these were basically global Illuminati and Knights Templar projects. Crazy as these stories are, I never seem to be amazed that reality far outpaces my ability to even concoct new crazier stories, crazier than the old ones. There is a guy in Florida who contacts Pleiadians from Alcyon. This is, there are several stars there in the Pleiades star cluster, about 500 light years away in our own galaxy. And these Pleiadians have been in contact with him for, I don't know, 5 years. The guy has about an inch tall stack of photographs of these guys hanging their saucers on top of the apartment buildings of his apartment complex in Florida. And in one photograph, there are four craft hanging as if parked right a little bit above the roof of the building next door. And they're kind of similar, the three of them. The fourth was a little bit different. It looked like a flattened by a steamroller Kaiser Wilhelm helmet. A little bit. And similar to the Honeyball craft of the Second World War, but only in retrospect did I go that. And this contactee in Florida was told that the fourth craft were actually Germans from a secret colony in the Amazon jungle. Remember these crazy films about some Nazi hunters that went to the Amazon jungle to discover a secret genetic laboratory? Not more. I mean, a little outfit with like 50 people or something. All these science fiction films are a gross understatement of what goes on behind the scenes. Not only there is another German colony in the Amazon jungle, similar to the one they had on the South Pole, and also a whole constellation of such colonies in South America. Basically, the Germans are the quiet behind-the-scenes runners of all these guerrilla dictatorships in South America. All these bases are connected with magnetically levitated tube shuttle trains, tube shuttles, in the same way as the American underground bases are connected here, or the Russians are connected in Russia, or the American and Russian system has been connected for 20 years under the Bering Strait, despite the smokescreen of the Cold War and all the other hoaxes that have been going on the surface. So the Germans from the Amazonian jungle colony have established a guest colony on Alcyon 500 light years away. So what we see on Star Trek, the new generation, the Deep Space Nine and Babylon 5, is again a gross understatement. Not only there are deep space bases established in free trading and commercial areas of our galaxy, but there have been also evacuation and survival colonies established on, obviously, other friendly planets with other friendly aliens. I mean, after all, the Pleiadians are tall, blonde, blue-eyed Nordics, so obviously they would contact the Germans on Earth and not the Aborigines or the Pygmies in Africa. Genetically, they are the closest. And this whole business of Pleiadians, Germans, the Nordics, the new master race, is nothing more than to re-engineer back into prominence the old Atlantean genetic stock on our planet, which was brought by the Pleiadians in the first place, and which was the major competitor genetically with the seed of the Trinity that was introduced somewhere in the Middle East. Basically, the Garden of Eden, according to the Urantia book, was somewhere in the Middle East. Ever since the decision of a group of angels to become independently minded and to try their own hand in planetary management, that happened about quarter of a million years ago, 250,000 years ago, according to the Urantia book. Ever since they decided to do that, basically there has been going this competition between their grouping and the group of the Trinity as a major player on our planet. There are many other celestial managers of even higher levels, but these are important players here around us. And so it has been a genetic arm-twisting, arm-wrestling match between the 500 million, there are about like half a billion resident Trinity beings that take care of the planet, planetary caretakers of the energy systems on the planet, biological systems, human systems, and on and on and on. I mean, there are hundreds of papers, of pages of explanation, for example, in the Urantia book of how the Trinity manages a planet. Parallel to that, there have been a massive independent angelic presence on the planet, and so these two camps have been untwisting each other as to whose genes would be finally become dominant on our planet. And the master race development from that standpoint is nothing more than an attempt to eliminate the genes of the Trinity. And this is where the Germans, with their South Polar colony, their evacuation colonies on Halcyon and many other places, stand. The missing children, and I thought, a few words about the missing children now. I thought there was a mistake of one digit when I heard that there were 400,000 missing children a year. I said, gee, man, that's not possible. That's 10 times the Vietnam War casualties for the whole war. They were like 40,000, something like that?
50,000.
Yeah. I said, no, that's not possible. So I called that milk carton 800 number for missing kids. That was my first, last, and only call I've done to this number. Hey guys, what are your statistics? What are the national statistics about missing children? How many are missing? I don't know. What do you mean? Are there any national statistics? I don't know. And here, immediately, the East European in me takes over, and I start massaging the bureaucracy. Well, you mean nobody compiles such statistics? Have you ever seen such a statistic? No? So there is no such a thing? I don't think so. Well, how about local statistics? Do you have any California state statistics or your office statistics? No. How about the scrapbook? Does anybody at your office keep a scrapbook of articles in newspapers with such thing? No. Have you gotten any visiting lecturers from anywhere giving you some statistics about that? No. Well, how about an educated estimate, a guesstimate? I don't know, I've been here in this business only 3 years. Well, gee, I've been in this for 5 minutes, so you have a big head start relative to me. Give it a try. What do you think your personal estimate would be? And the lady said, 200,000. I dropped the receiver. I had expected her to say 10,000, maybe 40,000. With my first, last, and only call, I got half of the rumored figure. I wouldn't be amazed that there are more than 100,000, more. And these are not only children that are taken away by splitting families and parents hide them from each other. Some of these children end up on the dismembering tables of the satanic cults, but even that is not the biggest consumer of missing children. I think the biggest portion of these children end up as genetic fodder. Even that is not the biggest percentage. I think the biggest percentage of missing children are sent to be indoctrinated into Boys of Brazil type of schooling systems in the underground bases on this planet, in evacuation and survival colonies on the moon, Mars, and beyond, and basically on all these colonies established elsewhere. The Illuminati presence on the planet tries to scatter the illuminated eggs in as many baskets as possible, so that if one of them breaks, there would be many others left safely away. Now I will talk briefly about hoaxes that are very important for the mind controlling of the most sophisticated and dangerous way that has been going on the planet. As an engineer, I've been investigating the greenhouse effect, and I would say it's a total BS. Admiral Byrd landed in 1947 on the South Pole, and they couldn't find on Little America the hut he himself had left 10 years earlier. A two-story building, I mean the building, the roof, was about 2 stories tall, and then there was a radio mast, about 5 stories tall. They couldn't find anything. Probably with a magnetometer they found the possible place. Even the mast was not sticking out of the snow and the ice. They dug a tunnel and finally found the house and went through the chimney down into the house and discovered their provisions still intact there in the freezing temperature. The moral of the story is that in 10 years on the South Pole, you've gotten about 5 stories of precipitation. I don't think there's any greenhouse effect if that much snow falls in 10 years on the South Pole. I don't think the South Polar ice cap is melting as is the supposed, and that's what greenhouse warming of the planet is. There was another Hercules plane that got stranded, I would say 70% on the South Pole, maybe 30% chance that somewhere on the northern basis, but anyway in the polar regions, and again in about 10 years it got covered, not up to the door, not up to the windows, not up to the wings, but almost to the tip of the vertical stabilizer, which is again about a 5-story building. Well, let's say Hercules would be about 3-story building. The greenhouse effect is a giant BS. The coming of the ice age is another such smokescreen. By massaging statistics, my brother studied sociology at Sofia University, and the first sentence their statistics professor told them was, guys, statistics is like a taxi cab. It would take you on demand anywhere you want. You can prove anything you want with statistics. So by massaging statistics, they can point to the Sahara Desert constantly increasing, so that by now it has reached almost all the way up to Scandinavia, when in fact the desert breathes up and down every few years or so on. And many other things. The ozone hole is the biggest and the most monstrous of these hoaxes. It is not... They have reversed the mechanism, and you can do that experiment on a budget of $20. You can even save these $20 by getting that thing on a credit card and returning it 3 days later to your supermarket. You can get a bug light, ultraviolet bug light, for whatever it costs. I mean, this, what's this color? This violet.
Ultraviolet.
The ultraviolet color, this bug light. The light, turn it on and leave it in your closet. You won't need 3 days for it to send it. Just after an hour, your closet would be reeking of what? Of ozone. Mm-hmm. When ultraviolet light strikes the atmosphere, it creates ozone. So it's not the giant ozone hole that's up there gaping, so there's nothing to stop the ultraviolet light from hitting the planet. On the contrary, the more there is lack of ozone, the better, because the ultraviolet light would create a new ozone. There's a hole in the ozone, but it's because there is no sun on the South Pole for 6 months. I mean, these guys in the public education system here, all these American scientists that have graduated from the public education system, hasn't anybody thought about that? There is no sun for 6 months on the South Pole? So it's natural to get a hole there. Then the hole moves to the North Pole when the North Polar winter comes. The chlorofluorocarbons have nothing to do with ozone hole. They are very heavy molecules. I mean, think about that. 80% of the production and consumption of chlorofluorocarbons in any form, shape and form, is in the northern hemisphere. Why there is no ozone hole in the northern hemisphere? The only one that was reported was on the South Pole. 80%, about 60-70% of the population lives on the northern hemisphere. Again, we have an ozone hole in the southern hemisphere. And most importantly, the atmosphere on the planet is basically consists of two halves, like if you slice a grapefruit along the equator. And the northern half and the southern half have very little to do with each other. The trade winds circle like this, but there is very little connection. The connection coefficient is very weak between the two. So basically what's generated in the northern hemisphere stays there. What's generated in the southern hemisphere stays there. That's why a nuclear winter by a nuclear war in the northern hemisphere would basically stay there, and on the southern hemisphere they'll be able to enjoy their sunny days on the Gold Coast of Australia, which by the way the elite has quietly been doing, buying up beachfront properties on the Gold Coast. So by having no weak coupling effect, all these chlorofluorocarbons that were consumed by the northern economies, how the hell would they go to the southern hemisphere all the way to the South Pole? The CFCs are so heavy molecules that when they get out of your spray, they fall to the floor with a thud. And then they go dun, 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 down the steps. If you happen to be in the second floor bathroom, they will fall all the way down to the first floor. There's absolutely no way for them to climb up in the stratosphere and to eat and kill and destroy the ozone layer. On the contrary, there is a giant volcano 100 miles upwind from the McMurdo station on the South Pole that spews out thousands of tons, tens of thousands of tons of chlorine and other chlorine compounds in the air. In the National Geographic, I've seen a beautiful picture from the McMurdo in the early 50s. Now, this will be the most dangerous picture to publish. You see the chemical fumes from the McMurdo volcano. The volcano has a different name, but it's close to the station. Anyway, the bottom line is that the ozone hole has nothing to do with the CFCs, and it is not dangerous to the ultraviolet, to our skin. Actually, the ultraviolet rays would patch an ozone hole by themselves. The reason they are doing is that by hitting the chlorofluorocarbons, they are actually hitting the refrigeration chain on the planet. By introducing new refrigerants, they will drive the price 10 times, probably. And by their well-tuned social and economical equations, they can calculate in advance how many new excess deaths in the developing countries and the third world will be caused by the increase in less available refrigeration to keep their crops from rotting, because the biggest famine in the third world happens by destroying of the crops. Their weakest point in the bottleneck of their food supply chain is the refrigeration. So exactly at the Achilles heel of the feeding of the third world is the intent of this diabolical strike. I allowed myself just one of these stories that I've been simply outlining here to see how simple it becomes if you know what the facts are. The comet would hit us, another favorite hoax. The government has the technology through the Star Trek craft to go to any planet and destroy it. Forget about the smaller comet. Even if a comet hits us, they have the technology through time traveling to go back in time and to destroy the comet before it hit us. And that would erase that timeline and the comet would never hit us. Imagine then the O.J. Simpson defense trying to battle against a government that has PUIs, the personal invisibility units. You push a little button and you become invisible. You can tamper any evidence you want. Time traveling capabilities, you can go back in time and tamper with any evidence you want. Just as a little side story here. Overpopulation is one of the biggest hoaxes that is related to the master race creation behind the scenes. It's connected to the energy crisis and the food shortages. There is no energy crisis because I have a film here, official Navy, U.S. Navy documentary film from 1947. Admiral Byrd visited the South Pole pretending to chase the Germans out of there. And his seaplane lands on a freshwater lake, never freezing lake, and the shores never freeze. I've never studied in classes of geography that there are never freezing regions on the South Pole. And in that Navy film, they say these regions look more like the Arizona and New Mexico desert. These are words I'm quoting from the official U.S. Navy film. The shores of this lake were covered with mountains of coal that would last this earth for centuries. The Germans were producing synthetic gasoline out of coal. 80% of the gasoline needs during the war were coming from synthetic gasoline.